Good morning. As you join us for our Sunday morning program, for those of us who are chronically flawed, yet eternally optimistic that we can somehow make tomorrow better than it is today, can I introduce you to a woman who is cited on her Twitter feed as America's number one female motivational speaker? She has a book called The 5 Second Rule. And this is my gift to you this morning because, Mel Robbins, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
If we can gain some insight from you as to how we can, you know, actually really make life a slightly better when we all know that the resting state, the default state of human nature, it's not just eternally happy, right? It's got to have bumps in it.
Of course.
So what is it that makes someone like you a motivational speaker with such huge success? I've seen your forums. There are people who are almost messianic, throwing themselves at your feet. You have the answer. How do you do it?
How do I do the speech, or how do I actually put people in a trance?
How do you put people? How does one choose and have the confidence to believe that you have the answer?
Well, I know I have the answer. First of all, life is a hell of a lot more simple than you think it is.
Yeah.
And we overcomplicate things to no end. And I also got into the motivational speaking business kicking and screaming. This was nothing I ever intended to do. And I think, as creepy and as weird as this may sound to some people, I think that I'm on a mission. I feel like this is literally divine intervention, and there's nothing religious that I talk about, but the story of how I became a motivational speaker is so unexpected and unlikely that there's no other explanation but for the fact that this was supposed to happen. And so that's part of the appeal, is that I am somebody who never set out to become a motivational speaker. I never set out to stand in stadiums of 20,000 people and share the brain tricks that I share. It just kind of happened despite what a screwed up human being I was.
Well, that's interesting because we are proud of ourselves on this program. We are a community of screwed up human beings.
And yet, then I'm with my people.
Well, we're eternally optimistic that there have to be things that we can do every day that kind of give us a greater grip on our own destiny, really. It's about...
Yes, you know, I think part of the problem is that most people think too big, that most of us think you've got to have these wild dreams and make these big strides and blow everything up and make these huge changes. And the truth about life is that you won't change anything by doing big things, but you'll change everything by doing little things. And it was a really hard lesson for me to learn. And it's something that I learned 10 years ago. And so, you know, my whole message is about the gap that we all live in, the gap between what's happening to you and your reaction to it. And that gap is 5 seconds long.
Now, that's really interesting because, in fact, that's what meditation gives you. It gives you a discipline to take a moment before you react. So you're saying that your motivational message could be distilled into actually choosing your reaction rather than impulsively just reacting to whatever's happening around you.
Yeah, and it's not even a message. Like I teach a tool. I teach a tool that is backed by science that's going to help you close the gap between the things that trigger you and what you do next. And it's very different to stand on a stage and spew a bunch of stuff that sounds very generic. I mean, look, we all follow people on Instagram for that crap. If you really want to change, talking about what you need to do isn't enough. You actually know, you have to have tools. You got to know, how do I combat the habits that I have that are encoded in my basal ganglia? How do I override a lifetime of negative thinking, of self-doubt, of anxiety? How do I break that habit? And the only way you're going to do it is using science. And, you know, my husband's a huge meditation person. I meditate throughout the day very actively in terms of being present. But as somebody who had a lifelong battle with anxiety, meditation blew, because the last place I want to be is in my mind when it's scrambling. Mm. And so the kind of tools that I talk about, they are forms of metacognition, which are, it's a fancy word for brain trick. But the tools that I talk about are all based in action. It's things to do, not things to think about.
So can we go to the beginning of your story? Because my listeners, we are great cynics. And, you know, we like to have a cup of tea and go, really? Where'd you get that from?
So, I'm a lawyer. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Exactly. So that's where I come from too, my critical thinking. You were a criminal attorney. What threw you this way? What was the pivotal moment that threw you? Well, obviously, you would have seen people's reactions in court. You would have had access to the human condition.
Of course. Yeah. No, what happened was long after I left the practice of law, because I was even too cynical to practice law. So that was a joke, by the way.
I'm with you.
So I found myself 10 years ago at a moment in my life where my husband's restaurant business was going under, and it was taking our marriage and our life savings and our home and our dignity and my confidence and his confidence right down the drain with it. And I found myself in a situation 10 years ago at the age of 40 that I never thought I would be in, which is I was going to lose it all. I felt like the world's biggest loser, and I couldn't get out of bed. Mm. I could not do the little stuff. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't make myself look for a job. I couldn't make myself be nice to Chris. I couldn't make myself exercise. I couldn't make myself stop isolating myself. I couldn't stop the barrage of negative thoughts that were going on. And, you know, the truth is that everybody knows what we need to do. The real secret in life is, how do you make yourself do the stuff that's irritating, that's difficult, that's scary? How do you make yourself believe enough to take action when you don't believe in yourself? And that's the situation that I was in 10 years ago. And look, it's not the world's worst story. There are people that face a lot more horrendous circumstances than I certainly did. But when the issues that are facing you are yours, they're personal. When the change that you're trying to make is yours, it's personal. And you got to confront all of the hardwired habits that are in your head. And so every morning I would struggle to get out of bed. And then every night I would say to myself, tomorrow I'm changing. Tomorrow I'm doing something different. Tomorrow I'm going to get up on time. Tomorrow I'm going to look for a job. And change never came. And, you know, one of the things that I'm famous for saying as one of the most booked motivational speakers in the world is that motivation is garbage. And the reason why I say that is because there are two forms of motivation. There's extrinsic motivation, which is the kind of motivation I provide when I'm standing on the stage. I provide the external pep talk and tools that you need in order to change, in order to feel like you can do it. What we all rely on too much is intrinsic motivation. And we've bought into this lie that at some point you're actually going to feel motivated to do the hard stuff. Well, guess what? You're never going to.
Never.
You're just not going to. Ever. No. But the hard lesson I needed to learn is that you don't have to feel like it, and you can still do it. And so what happened for me is that, you know, I was struggling, and I one night I was watching TV and I see this rocket ship go across a television screen, and I think, oh my God, that's the answer to getting up on time. I'm going to launch myself out of bed like a rocket. I'm going to move so fast that my feet are going to hit the floor before the self-doubt can hit my brain. I'm going to close that gap. And the next morning, the alarm went off, and I could feel the self-doubt coming. I could feel myself reaching for the snooze alarm. I had no reason to get out of bed. I didn't have a job. I mean, why? Who needs to get up? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I counted backwards the way that a space program launches a rocket. And all of a sudden, I was standing up. And I used it for a couple mornings to get out of bed, and then I was kind of freaked out that something so simple would work, because I'm a cynic and I'm a skeptic. And then I said to myself, well, let's test it. If you're in a situation where you know what to do, but you feel the excuse is coming, count backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and let's see what happens. And the first time I used it, other than the snooze alarm, I walked into the kitchen. And you know how that thing happens with the people that you love where you see them and you just want to kill them?
No.
Well, yeah, you know, Well, I walked into the kitchen and there was my husband, Chris, and I just was so frustrated. I just wanted to just scream at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And all of a sudden I'm able to speak to him differently. And because the truth is, I didn't want to get divorced. I knew the guy didn't like bankrupt his business on purpose. I knew that we were both trying to fix this. I was just scared. And see, you can't control the things that are happening, and you can't necessarily control the things that trigger you, but you can control your reaction. And so I started calling this thing the 5-second rule, and using it, I started to realize that there's a distinct gap between the things that trigger you and what you do next. And when you count backwards, you actually gain control. And you know what I've since learned, because I've now studied it, I've written, at least in America, it was the number one audiobook and one of the top 5 most read books on Amazon last year.
Stop.
I gave a TED. Yep.
I know. We're just going to get to the TED talk, but let's not gloss over. I studied it. How did you study it?
I started calling people and interviewing them, because what happened is I gave the TED talk first, and the TED talk was not supposed to be about the 5-second rule. The TED talk was about career change, and it was the first time I'd ever given a speech, and I had a panic attack during it and forgot how to end the speech. And then I said, oh, by the way, there's this thing I do. I call it the 5-second rule, never intending to include it in the speech. And I left the stage, and somebody put it on a online, and it's got almost 14 million views. And
it's not an easy thing to get a TED talk. It's not an easy thing to get a TED talk commissioned. I mean, how did you find yourself in that space?
Well, what happened is this was 6 years ago, before TEDx was a big thing and before TED was even really a big thing, frankly. And it was the first TEDx conference that they were sponsoring. And somebody asked me, a friend of a friend of a friend, said, oh, career change. Talk to Mel. She's changed her career a million times. And so that's just how it happened.
So opportunity knocks when you're not even thinking that it is one.
Not even thinking. I mean, by this point, I'd been using the 5-second rule privately, and so had my husband for a couple years, and we turned our lives around, and he turned the restaurant business around 5 seconds at a time. And
really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, because your decisions dictate your life. And when you're making decisions that are triggered by emotion, they lead you in the wrong direction. When you're in control of the decisions that you make, you can align what you're doing with your values and the outcome that you want. And so I had been using it for 2 years. I go to give this talk about career change. I have a panic attack on stage. I forget how to end the speech. So I mention the 5-second rule. I leave the stage. Somebody puts it online. It goes viral. And that's not even the crazy part. The crazy part is people started to write. And by people, I mean, I've heard from more than 250,000 people in 91 countries.
Wow.
And they all write about the 5-second rule. And they write about some profound stuff. I didn't jump overboard and kill myself because I used the 5-second rule to stop myself. I don't have PTSD anymore because I used the 5-second rule to re-engineer the way I respond to all the triggers. I saved my marriage. I stopped smoking. I'm able to be sober. I've tripled my income. I've launched this business. I've changed my, I mean, on and on and on and on and on. And something happens to you when you put an idea out into the world and the world responds. I personally felt a moral obligation to figure out, why does something so simple, counting 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, create profound change for everybody who uses it? And so I started calling neuroscientists and researchers. And by this point, I had a syndicated radio show. I had won a bunch of awards. CNN had hired me to be an on-air commentator. And so when you call and say, yeah, I'm Mel Robbins with CNN, people call back. And so I got to speak to the world's leading scientists and habit researchers and neuroscientists. And what I discovered is that that night, watching television after having 4 bourbons on the rocks, I invented, half drunk, one of the most powerful forms of metacognition ever invented. And what it actually does is when you count backwards, you override the habits that are encoded in your basal ganglia and you draw your focus to your prefrontal cortex. It's a cheat code for your brain.
Tell me about your basal ganglia, because it sounds delicious if you poach it.
Well, it's the interior part of your brain, and it's basically a core part of the brain that automates behavior. So it remembers behavior patterns and thinking patterns and loops.
What you did last time.
Yeah, and there's three parts to any habit or pattern. There's a trigger that stimulates you to then repeat the pattern, and then there's a reward. So whether the pattern is doubting yourself so you don't talk, and the reward is then you get to be safe because you didn't expose, you know, yourself to your colleagues, or the pattern is smoking, and every day at 3 o'clock, it triggers you to want to have that mid-afternoon smoke, that's what gets encoded. And then you do those patterns on automatic. You don't even think about it when you're doing them. And they get triggered by things like people and place of time and place and time and smells and music and environment. And you don't even realize that 50% of what you do every day, you do on autopilot.
Hmm.
And so part of what makes it difficult for human beings to change a thinking pattern or to change a behavior pattern is most people get really surface level advice and they don't understand the mechanism inside their head that has encoded the behavior as a pattern. And until you have the ability to catch yourself between the trigger that turns on the automatic part of your brain and the pattern that you repeat, you will likely always succumb to the pattern.
So what this does is, in a sense, it overrides Jung and those that take your behavioral patterns to your childhood. Because what you're saying is it actually doesn't matter where the behavior stems from. It's just recognizing that it's there and this is how you override it. You don't have to sit in therapy, talk about your childhood, undo yourself.
I mean, therapy helps a lot and I believe in it. And I certainly believe in taking meds if you're in a hole and you can't get out. But the bigger issue for most of us is, you can talk about patterns all day long, but unless you actually know how to override them using science, you're screwed. And you'll be frustrated, like most of us are, because we can talk about what's wrong, but we don't feel like we have the capacity to actually change the behavior.
And how do you know which behavior is self-defeating? Like, how do you know what the right option is? Once you've overridden the self-defeating behavior, what steers you in the correct direction of more productive outcomes?
Well, I think that most of us know the areas of our life that we're miserable in. And if you were to simply list out the areas of your life where you're not satisfied, and then you explore why, and then you ask yourself, well, what is it that I keep doing? There's your answer. And, you know, you can essentially try anything different. Try the opposite of what you're doing. If you're the kind of person that edits yourself at work and you're wondering why you're not getting promoted, I'll tell you why. You're not visible. And because the pattern that you have in your head is that you always edit yourself and doubt yourself and silence yourself, you're going to have to interrupt the fact that sitting in a meeting triggers you. You're going to have to override the pattern of doubting, and you're going to have to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, push yourself to speak. And so it's never going to feel comfortable. It's never going to feel normal. It's never going to feel like something you want to do, but you're going to have to if you actually want to change the outcome.
Mel Robbins, what an amazing experience it is just having this short conversation with you.
Oh, well, thank you. And you know what's also cool about it? It's free. And you can teach it to your kids. And the thing that I have used it for that has been the most profound is you're talking to a woman who suffered from anxiety for my entire life. And I was on meds. I took Zoloft for 2 decades.
Wow.
And about 5 years ago, I thought, I wonder, given that all these other people around the world are having remarkable success with this tool, doing profound things, I wonder if I could use it to fundamentally change my thinking patterns. And the answer is yes, you can. So policing my habit of worrying and my habit of doubting myself, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, interrupting it and then overriding the thought and placing in a thought that's not necessarily positive, but certainly more empowering, I have cured myself of anxiety. I haven't been on meds in 5 years. I haven't had a panic attack, a bout of anxiety. I don't even worry about anything because I understand something that's liberating, and that is that you can actually control what you think about. And I know meditation teaches you, or some meditation teaches you, that you can't control the first thought. I actually think you can. I think that if you actually go to work and you interrupt your habit of worrying, you can stop your brain from doing it. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Mel Robbins, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.